Part 9.
What have you done to him, you slimy piece of...
Mercedes, don't use such language, especially not on your wedding day. I've borrowed your handsome fiancé and taken him away. Taken him to my place, you could say. I'm going to give you a chance to save him. Send your friends to me. I will take your lives for his. Corrigan, Picard, Doyle, Weston, and you. If you lay down before me, I will let poor little Charlie walk away. If not, I will perform a wedding ceremony that will, well, be quite pleasurable for me, but not quite as much for him, I fear. After which, our own little honeymoon will take place, although not quite what he had in mind when he got up this morning either. Mercedes squeezed the phone tight enough for it to leave red marks on her palm.
If you touch one hair on his head, I will personally turn you inside out.
There's no need for threats. I always keep my promises. If you and your friends come over here, and if you die, he goes free and lives to see another day. You have my word.
And where is here? Where do we go?
Transamerica Pyramid. Lobby elevator. Someone will meet you there.
He paused.
And best not to wait too long. I might get the impression that you're stalling. I don't want anything like last time. No fighting and killing of my friends. This is an exchange of lives. And if you attack us and fight back, his life is forfeit. Do you understand?
Perfectly. Que te fue un pez espada.
My Spanish is not good enough to understand what you said, mon cher. However, judging from your tone of voice, it's not something I would enjoy. I will see you shortly.
There was a click in Mercedes' ear, and the connection was gone. Mercedes looked at herself in the mirror one last time, looking into her own eyes for a moment like she was summoning strength or controlling her anger, before turning and heading out the door. Matt had been late, so he was relieved to see that he hadn't missed anything. He snuck in through the little green door to the park and headed for the drinks buffet. With one hand, he pulled on his collar. He hated wearing a tie. And it didn't make things better that this looked like it would be one of San Francisco's warmer days. Despite his discomfort, he couldn't help but cast an approving gaze around him. The little park was decorated with large flower garlands, and the two little gazebos were polished to a bright white shine. A little house lay at the end of the park, which was, in reality, small enough to be considered a large yard, and people stood in small groups and talked. Matt had spent the better part of yesterday with Brian, Wolf, and Chung, trying to explain to them what had happened and why they had been targeted. Needless to say, none of them had been happy about being bitten by vampires, but Matt was surprised how easy it had been for him to convince them that the supernatural world was indeed real. Wolf had even told him how he had waited all his life for something like that.
"I'm a role player," he had said. "And I've hoped for a world where stuff like this happens since I was old enough to use a computer or read a role-playing book. Sure, it sucked to get gnawed on, and it's going to be a while before Chung can really use his mouse hand again, but who cares? We know an actual superhero!"
Brian and Chung had been equally supportive, and the four friends had spent the day and night cleaning up the mess in Brian's apartment and laughing together. Eventually, they had decided to play the game they hadn't played on the night of the attack, and it had been much later than he had counted on before they went home. Matt had only slept a few hours, and when the alarm had torn him out of the confused dreams of running through forests, chasing animals and eating them, he had known he needed to get a move on to make the wedding. He could see Andrew close to the podium, but there was no sign of any of the others. After taking a soda from the table with drinks, he strolled over to Andrew, who looked a little worried. "Where is everybody? I thought I was seriously late, but they're still serving drinks." Andrew looked at him with serious eyes. "We've got kind of a situation." The next moment, the door to the building flew open, and Mercedes strode out, her two sisters and Bob in hot pursuit. She headed for Matt and Andrew.
"Maurice has abducted Charlie," she said, in a voice that, although low, was hard as steel. "He's looking to make a switch, his life for ours."
"This seems familiar,"
Matt groaned.
"Mercedes, you don't have to—"
Andrew began, but she cut him off by stamping her foot into the ground.
"What don't I have to do? That's my fiancé he's got. I'm going to go over there and kill him. I don't care what he says about laying down our lives. I'll kill him."
She looked down at her dress.
"But not like this."
She took hold of her white dress, hiked the skirt up, and made a heavy knot, tucking the white fabric indifferently into a long roll on her hip, leaving her legs free and showing the blue garter on her left thigh. When the dress was secured, she took hold of the train that was attached to the back and ripped it loose, dropping it to the ground and leaving rips in the fabric where the pins had been. There was a collective gasp from several of the guests.
"Are you guys coming?"
she asked, as she began heading for the gate to the street.
"Of course we are,"
Matt said.
"I'm driving,"
Andrew declared.
"Where are we going?" "The Transamerica Pyramid,"
Mercedes replied.
"And we better make it fast. I've got a nasty feeling Maurice is going to abuse Charlie in a very uncomfortable way."
The three friends walked through the guests and out the gate, which left Bob standing on the podium, flanked by Isabella and Victoria, who both looked very confused.
"Ladies and gentlemen,"
Bob said, clearing his throat and trying to sound comforting.
"There will be a slight delay in the festivities. However, the bar's still open."
Andrew drove fast down the hills, throwing the car to the side to avoid one of the cable cars that struggled upward. He didn't bother honking at it. Most of the cable car drivers felt like they owned the streets, and considering how much money went into their tills at the end of the day, they might be right. Mercedes sat in the passenger seat with Matt in the back. He had taken the opportunity to tear off his tie and unbutton his shirt at the collar. Next to him on the seat, invisible to the two in front, Cougar curled up. She looked out the window and looked peaceful enough, but was nevertheless preparing for a fight. Matt could feel her energy flowing from her into him, and he knew why. The cougar was, first and foremost, a protector, and right now, both Matt and she were going to protect his friends. He knew it might mean he had to kill someone again, but there was a part of him, a large part, he was surprised to find, that wanted to kill Maurice for what he had done, not just to his friends, but to all the innocent people he had killed in the past weeks.
"We can't park in front of the pyramid,"
Andrew said.
"I'm gonna—" "Park right in front of the door,"
Mercedes ordered. She looked straight ahead, and her dark eyes looked almost completely black.
"I don't care if they tow the car. We're not wasting a single second finding a parking spot."
"Right. Understood." Andrew pushed the accelerator a little more down, and the car practically flew down the last steep hill toward the financial district. He looked in his mirror, cut across several lanes of traffic, and ran the car up on the sidewalk, making a number of people leap to safety. He stopped only a few steps from the large, impressive entrance to the pyramid lobby.
"End of the line,"
Andrew said.
"Let's hope not."
Matt opened the back door and got out, ignoring the other people on the sidewalk who were casting them curious or angry glances. Mercedes got out as the last. She stepped around the car's front at the same time as they noticed a popping sound to their right. Jim and Rhea materialized next to the entrance, holding hands. In his other hand, Jim held his sword.
"How did you know to get here?"
Jim said, surprised. He looked at Mercedes' dress and felt a deep pang of sympathy for her. However, Mercedes didn't even seem to flinch.
"Maurice decided to call me and tell me where Charlie is. He wants to set up an exchange. He wants us to die, and he lets Charlie go."
"Exactly the same thing he tried to do with me," Matt said. "Except he wants us to not fight back this time. I think I scared him a little."
"If he thinks we'll just go quietly into the good night, he's sorely mistaken, though," Andrew said. "I've got no plans to just roll over and die."
"I don't think either of us does," Rhea said. "However, there's one problem. If he takes control of me, like he apparently can do, I could end up being a huge liability."
"Funny you should mention that."
Jim reached into his pocket and took out a little clear plastic box.
"Remember when you complained about my snoring the other day?"
"Welcome,"
Diego said, as the Tempest team approached the elevators. He was leaning on the wall, looking for all the world like he was just relaxing and waiting for something interesting to happen. He was wearing elegant attire that made Jim think of a Spanish nobleman. He wore a shirt with ruffles at the wrists and the collar, and a short jacket and pants in a bright green color.
"Maurice is waiting. I'll take you down."
"Should we be honored?" Andrew said. "I thought a regent would have better things to do than just minding the elevator."
Diego scowled at him.
"This isn't an official function. Maurice has asked me to guide you. And of course you just obey like the lapdog that you are."
Jim nodded in understanding.
"Makes perfect sense to me."
"You can insult me all you want, Mr. Corrigan,"
Diego said.
"I'll soon be far more important to this city than you ever were."
"I doubt it," Jim said.
"Some of us are here by divine intervention, you know."
Diego didn't reply, but his eyes followed Jim as they all stepped inside the elevator. Diego pushed a code on the buttons, and the elevator began to go down.
"Basement, huh?"
Matt said.
"That makes sense. You are kind of like rats."
Diego gave a sigh.
"You might have killed Ernst, Mr. Boyle. You might think that you have powers, that you have something that will keep you alive. I've lived far longer than you and seen things you can only imagine. I've killed more people than could fill the largest stadium in this city."
"That's Oracle Park," Mercedes said. "If you want to live in this city, you should at least know stuff like that."
The elevator door opened before Diego could answer. He looked at them for a moment more and then said in his most polite voice,
"Follow me."
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
They followed him into the room Jim had seen in his vision, and where he, so many years ago, had been asked to perform certain duties by Prince Lamort. Now the room was empty, except for two people. One was Charlie, sitting in a large leather chair. He was tied on his hands and feet, had ropes around his neck and body, and above him, suspended from the ceiling, hung a large knife blade, suspended only in a thin piece of string or rope. It looked like an old-style guillotine, but without the wooden frame. Diego moved to his side and stood right next to the chair. The other person, who stood in the middle of the room, dressed all in white, was Maurice. Jim now remembered him from his youth, but to most of the others, this was the first time they actually faced him. He looked excited and confident at the same time, reaching both arms forward toward them as if they were welcome guests, which, Jim supposed, in a way, they were.
"Welcome! Do you like my little display? I call it the Guillotine of Damocles. I supposed I could have used a sword, but that would be so unoriginal, wouldn't it? If anything should go wrong today, breaking that string will be the easiest thing in the world for Diego to do, and poor Charlie will be thinly sliced lunch meat. Are we clear on that?"
"Crystal," Jim said. He turned his wrist, bringing his sword up in a fighting stance.
"But if that's your endgame, you might as well pull that thing now. We have no intentions of giving up."
Maurice sighed.
"I thought as much. I had hoped you would be honorable men and women. But, of course, you are Americans."
"Adopted Canadian," Andrew said.
"Australian, actually," Matt said. "Mexican," Mercedes said.
Maurice looked like he hadn't expected them to reply, and it threw him off his monologue.
"You were saying?"
Jim said, making a grand gesture with his free hand toward the chair. Maurice said, trying to find the thread again.
"I mean, you are without honor, beyond trust. You say one thing and do another."
"That's pretty common to most people who want to survive," Jim said. "You've probably been a vampire for too long to remember."
"Perhaps, but I have not..."
"Can we cut through the mierda?"
Mercedes said.
"Let's just kick his ass!"
Maurice sighed and made a gesture at Diego, who, with a flick of his fingers, broke the string. Charlie closed his eyes. The knife didn't fall. It didn't move at all.
"Oh, did you not know,"
Rhea said casually,
"that I can't just move stuff with my mind, that I can also hold it in place? Or did your minions forget to mention that?"
Diego looked up at the knife, his eyes widening. The next second, the chair Charlie sat in scooted forward like a roller coaster, sliding across the floor and into the corridor where the elevator was. Charlie's head rolled as it moved. He had passed out. The knife dropped down and with a sickening sound impaled itself in the hardwood floor. Jim leaped forward, raising the sword.
"This is it, Maurice. This is the end of the road for you. I've been waiting for this moment for longer than you know. It's just you and me now. Let's finish this."
Maurice took a few steps back, reached beneath the dais, and grabbed something. With a metallic sound, he drew a sword from a hidden sheath. It looked different than Jim's sword, which was more of a katana, but it also looked sharp and deadly. The blade was pitch black.
"By all means, Jim Corrigan. Come at me. I am waiting."
"You guys leave him to me. He's mine,"
Jim said, and attacked. With a swing of his arm, Maurice parried Jim's first attack. The sound of the swords crashing together was very loud, and sparks flew every which way from where the blades touched. Maurice took several steps back, turned his face toward the others, and raised one hand. They all felt the enormous power emanating from him.
"Rhea!"
he shouted.
"You hate this man! You want to destroy him! Crush him! Anger! Hate! Rage!"
Rhea smiled a polite smile, but didn't even flinch.
"Are you talking to me? Because I'm afraid I can't hear you. Earplugs are a wonderful thing."
Maurice's face, already pale, now became almost chalk white.
"Get them!"
he screamed at Diego, before lifting his weapon to attack Jim. Diego walked toward them, his hands opening and closing. He didn't look pleased with the situation.
You don't have to be his lapdog, Matt said. We're four against one, and have already killed your friend. We can tear you apart. None of you have powers, Diego said, but his cultured voice was cracking a little. You're just humans.
How do you know? Mercedes said. You didn't think Matt had powers, and he literally ripped your friend a new one. What if we told you we just haven't had the chance to use our powers yet?
Andrew gestured at Rhea.
And let's not forget Rhea, who, even though she's deaf at the moment, still can see what's going on and react to it, the way she stopped the blade from falling on Charlie.
Diego looked from one to the other. It was clear he didn't know who to attack first, or if he should just surrender. Meanwhile, Jim spun and parried, slashed and cut, in the duel of his life. Maurice had obviously been practicing fencing for the entire duration of his immortal life, whereas Jim had always relied on his instincts, which he assumed Howard had equipped him with as part of the immortal package. Maurice was stronger than him, faster, and more daring in his moves, and Jim felt himself slowly being pushed back on the floor toward the mural on the wall. He slashed out, managed to cut Maurice across the chest, but there was neither blood nor the impression that the vampire was hurt. Instead, Maurice snarled, baring his fangs, and attacked again, driving Jim further back. For the first time, Jim considered the idea that he might actually lose this duel and spoil the mission. He thought about some of the things he had heard from Andrew, the other Andrew, back in 1933. He hadn't said much about the future he and the other Feline had come from, but he had said enough to infer that if Maurice won, the world would be on the fast track to an apocalypse. He couldn't let that happen. Jim tried a move that had worked for him before, suddenly changing hands and spinning around, coming at Maurice from behind. He turned, but Maurice had apparently seen the trick before. His right foot shot out to trip Jim, and in mid-spin, Jim lost his balance and fell to his knees. The sword flew from his hand and clattered to the floor, out of his reach. Maurice laughed, a high, musical laugh.
Ha-ha! And so it ends. Such a pity. You, the immortal Jim Corrigan, the one all vampires in San Francisco feared. On his knees, your weapon lost.
I don't suppose you see the irony in you losing your head after your friend tore the head off of mine.
Oh, believe me, Jim said. I see the irony.
He slowly began to get up, but Maurice's sword fell against his neck, making him stop.
This, as you said, is the end.
Maurice smiled.
I had hoped you wouldn't have cheated, but alas, you can't have it all.
He moved the blade a little, and Jim could feel the edge cutting into his skin. He heard no battle sounds from the other end of the room, but didn't know if that meant his friends had won or lost, and Maurice's body blocked his view. He wished he could have seen Rhea before he died.
Any last words, Jim Corrigan? Maurice said. Any final words of wisdom you wish to impart on me before I lay your city and your world in ruins?
Yeah,
Mercedes' voice said.
Look behind you.
Maurice began to turn his head, but before he could, a shining silver blade cut through his neck like a flash of lightning. His eyes widened as his head continued its movement, now amplified by the force of the blow, and turned around 180 degrees so he could see what was behind him. Mercedes stood behind him, her wedding dress now drooping off one shoulder as well. In her hand was Jim's sword, and her expression was one of cold determination. "And here's another one," she said. "Never mess with a Mexican's wedding." Maurice opened his mouth, almost as if he had a reply to this, but the head slowly rolled off his shoulders and hit the floor with a heavy thud. His body collapsed a moment later on top of Jim, who managed to raise one arm and push it off him. Jim slowly got to his feet. A moment later, Mercedes dropped the sword and embraced him. He put his arms around her.
You did it," he whispered. "You stopped him. You completed the mission."
"Who cares about some stupid mission?" she whispered. "I saved you, and Charlie's okay. That's what matters."
Jim held her close.
"You're right. You're absolutely right. Thank you."
They both turned to face the others. Matt held Diego back, one hand raised and fingers curled like claws. Diego didn't look like he felt like fighting back. Andrew and Rhea were on them a moment later, embracing them both in a group hug that almost made Jim and Mercedes fall over.
"Dios mío, I feel like I could sleep for 100 years, Mercedes said. "Must be the adrenaline rush ending."
"You've got no time to sleep," Andrew said and looked at her. His face broke into a big smile. "You've got a groom to wake up and a wedding to get to."
"What do we do about him?" asked Rhea, who had removed the earplugs Jim had given her. "Is he going to be a problem? Because I have absolutely no problem letting him join his friend in the underground."
"He surrendered," Mercedes said. "Maurice made a big deal about them keeping their promises, and I think he actually meant that."
"Not to mention," Andrew said, "that this is actually still the acting regent. We've killed Maurice, and I don't think anyone will have a problem with that, least of all the prince or Alani. But if we take out Diego, we might commit a big crime in their eyes."
"He's still a killer," Rhea said. "He killed a bunch of people with Maurice."
"Then I think it's a safe bet the vampires themselves will punish him."
Jim brushed off his pants.
"If he's very lucky, they'll have a blood hunt called on him, and he'll have a chance to run. If he's not, the prince will have him killed as a traitor. He did bring mortals into the Elysium."
Diego said nothing. He looked at Maurice's body with tears in his eyes.
"I'll call Alani," Rhea said. "Tell her what happened here and get her over here. I have a feeling she won't be far away." "In the meantime, I'll go liberate Charlie," Mercedes said. "Can I borrow the sword again?"
Jim gestured to it.
"Be my guest."
Mercedes picked up the sword and ran toward the front room, while Rhea got her phone out and called a number.
"Alani? Yeah, it's me again. No, I think this time will really be the last time I call. You might want to join us in the Elysium and take custody of your fellow regent."
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.